Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon, recording here at WGN Radio. I feel like I've got my twin, although not necessarily directly looking like me, but in every other way, if you were to read a blind bio, I think people would have a very hard time discerning the difference between this individual and myself, Kevin Leland, who's who I'm talking to. Kevin, let's see here. I don't even want to go down the line, but we've got the Lightbank connection. So we've got Lightbank. Last week, we had Vic Pascucci from Lightbank. I think almost every week, we've got someone from Lightbank. We've got the Medill. Got the Northwestern Medill connection, and then there's the Technori connection. So, like, literally, your LinkedIn bio reads like mine.
Yes,
only in reverse order. It's, we've been trying to find each other all this time, and Seth, for whatever reason, did not just do like a matchmaker intro right off the bat, which I feel like is something that we should criticize Seth for.
Yeah, it's his bad for sure.
So, Kevin, first off, thank you for joining us here, and thank you as a person who now runs Technori. Thank you for the work you did to get Technori to this point. We're going to talk a little bit about what you're up to now and all that kind of stuff. But what I want to learn about you is what got you to this point. And I ask this with a very specific window that I'm looking through, because I'm looking at this and I'm going, this is a guy who did all the things that I'm doing now, like 5 years ago.
Right.
So it was a different world in Chicago. It was a different everything. And the way that Technori had to get off the ground, the whole reason for Technori getting off the ground is so different than the purpose we serve and the mission we serve now. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to know, like, what would make a person, tell us a little bit about, like, when you got involved in Chicago Tech and so forth, but, like, what would make a person loony enough to want to jump in at the time you did? Because there was nothing there. There was, like, 10,000 square feet of 1871, and that wasn't even up yet.
Yeah, so I was at Kellogg, actually, going part-time.
Me too. There you go.
The Tribune Company, doing marketing mostly for Red Eye and Chicago Tribune. And I had always been interested in startups and starting a company, which is one of the reasons I went to Kellogg. And I took this course called Disruptive Technology that was taught by a gentleman who no one ever heard of. And so the class was really small. I should have taken accounting or something or a requirement. I took this class instead. And it was taught by Eric Lefkowski, who a lot of people, of course, know now.
This is the Groupon co-founder Tempest Lightbank, for those of you out there that have been living under a rock.
And he, I got to know him through the class. And at this point, Groupon was called The Point.
Yep.
Andrew Mason even came and spoke to the class and talked about some of the different pivots they were thinking about, because it was really a public policy platform at that point.
Just as a side note, I think they're due for another pivot.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that out loud, but I just did.
Yeah, they're going to start probably biotech, actually. It's a big space these days, which you can talk about in a little bit.
But, yeah.
So I stayed in touch with Eric because it was a small class. And about a year later, after they did their first pivot to Groupon, which obviously worked really well, Eric reached out to me about joining a VC firm, which didn't even have a name at the time, as an entrepreneur in residence. My offer letter literally said Innovation Group. I told my parents, and they were like, this looks super sketchy. What is Innovation? I can't find this on Google. She like searched all over the place. She's like, is this a real company? And it was myself and three other people. We were the first four employees. We worked out of Echo Logistics. We didn't even have an office at that point. I literally wrote the press release announcing Lightbank. And we had a name at that time. And it was exciting, Technori actually was very visionary too. Seth was very visionary, was starting around the same time.
Yep.
And that's kind of how I got my foot in the door.
You know, it's kind of an interesting aside that you've highlighted without purposefully highlighting is the name thing. So if you look at almost every, I don't want to call them all bullshit, but they're kind of mostly these like mentor program things that like are, they're like masquerading as an accelerator, and companies go there to learn how to launch whatever lean startup launch, whatever. The like number one thing that they always tell you to do is like, go find a name. And like, you got a brand around, like come up with a cool name that's got a domain and its own thing, and you market around it, and then you build around it. And if you look at the success stories, and you've named just a few examples with Lefkowski and Brad Keywell, but other companies as well. You look at Snapsheet, which is another one that you know well, Brad Weisberg. There wasn't a name. They had a great idea of like a problem that was annoying them, and they wanted to solve it.
Yeah.
And then they figured out like down the road, once they knew what they were and how it was going to connect, that Lightbank companies don't have names until later.
So,
and I don't think that's a coincidence.
I've got some good Lightbank lore actually related to that.
Do tell.
So Eric and Brad, they like to recycle domains that they purchased. So Lightbank was actually a completely different startup. Yep. They had purchased that. And Belly, which the loyalty program, They got that name because I was working on a completely different startup that was based on one of Eric's idea, and I bought bellyflop.com.
Nice.
And great name, got it on a great deal. It was not at all related to loyalty marketing.
Yeah, sure.
But they liked the name, and they eventually just took off the flop and added card to it. So that's where Belly Card came from. And even High Ground, which is a employee engagement program, that was also a domain that I had purchased for something completely different.
I am a follower of the same thing. I've got, at this point, I've gotten rid of some of them, but we're talking dozens of domains. I mean, there was like a point I had like 100 and something. And my original company, I think I renamed it two or three times before I got to this point. And it always looked like, well, the name thing is that you just look at a brand that you think is a marketable name. Is that something that
exactly.
we can market it? It doesn't necessarily, like Technori, what does that even mean?
Exactly.
You know, it comes down to, can you build a cool brand around something? But ultimately, I guess my main point here is, I think it's a fascinating insight that companies like Lightbank, who have had so much success, that one of the common denominators is that they do things absolutely differently from what almost every one of the other startup cookers, if you want to call it that, try to do, what they convey.
Yeah, I think, I mean, naming, you could write a lot of different books about it and talk about it a lot. I do think it's important. If somebody comes to me with a startup and it just has an atrocious name, or if it's spelled,
I would
really,
agree with that. Yeah,
if it's spelled with like three F's or something, which I've seen before, yep. No one would ever be able to find it. That to me tells me that these people don't understand humans or
yes.
psychology.
So I would totally agree with that. I find that it's not to say that you can go without a name,
right?
But I do think that there's a lot to be said about the companies that come through. That have thought through the idea so much that they can sell me on that and nothing else.
Right.
And that to me is interesting. And I think that we're going down the wrong path with all this kind of crazy stuff,
yeah.
but just to like put a nail in its coffin.
Yeah.
This is just me pontificating just
yeah.
for clarity. This is not the opinion of Kevin across me. This is my opinion. I look at a lot of those startup factories and I think that they are just that, startup factories. They have to concoct some sort of marketing strategy to create inventory in order to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go like, you got to have a name. And
mm-hmm.
then they come up with all these people and help them get names and they sell them all kinds of services and that's how they make their money.
Yeah.
And it's actually a scam. That's just,
yeah.
that's where I was going with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, Halo has a great name. Unfortunately, we're not the only Halo, but I actually don't think it matters, especially since everyone's mobile these days.
Yeah.
To me, it's all about how that name, what that name conveys to people and how it makes you feel. And I think you can build a brand around that and help connect that to something that means something to people.
I completely agree. So let's start pivoting towards, speaking of pivoting, let's start pivoting towards your career though, because like the Eric Lefkoski thing is interesting in a lot of ways. We talked about just the commonality that we have in that, but to me, another commonality that you and I share, and not just you and I, but you and I and Seth, and you and I and Brad Weisberg, and you and I, mm-hmm. and a lot of founders of companies that have found success, the commonality is connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain connections in your life
mm-hmm.
that are profound,
mm-hmm.
and they give you access somewhere that no one else can give you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to you whether to capitalize. Eric Lefkoski probably met 35 people in that classroom,
mm-hmm.
but you and he...
Yeah,
connected and did something, and that's the differentiator, which brings us to Halo.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about what Halo is and how you've gone from sitting in a class at Kellogg to Halo.
Yep. So not to talk too much about Eric Lefkoski because he gets a lot of press time.
I think
this is a good name to throw around.
Like, it is. He likes it except when we talk about his real estate. He doesn't dig that.
Yeah, yeah. But the actual original idea for Halo partially was connected to Eric as well. I literally just saw on LinkedIn that he had posted a press release about his foundation, the Lefkoski Foundation, donating $500,000 to a researcher studying gastric cancer at Stanford. And for whatever reason, that sparked in me this idea where why can I, as a non-billionaire, extremely wealthy person, why can't I just donate directly to a researcher who's studying or researching a particular disease? And you really can't. There's, obviously there are foundations that focus on it, but there's no direct relationship between the scientist and the donor. And so the original idea for Halo was actually crowdfunding for research projects, and not just any research project, but specifically what's called translational research, which a lot of people don't know about. Translational research is what happens after all the stuff that happens in the lab. They have to make sure this can work actually on humans without killing you, essentially.
Yeah.
And there's very little funding for it. And at the same time, it's promising. It's actually made it past a number of milestones. And so the idea was to raise money for that de-risking research to move it forward. Now, we did a campaign or two, and I just had a really hard time with a number of different technicalities involving raising money. And so today we are pivoting. We're announcing on Thursday our new platform, which is solving a similar problem, but we are connecting these scientists who want to advance their research with pharmaceutical companies and biotech companies who can provide that expertise and that funding and that resource and those resources to help advance and turn that research into actual patient treatments that all of us can benefit from.
So how do you make the connection for the pharmaceuticals and the actual people who are trying to do the research? Like, what is, walk me through the actual process of being participating with HALO.
Yeah, so there's two ways that it can work. And this happens already, by the way. If you go to any pharmaceutical website, they have these partnering pages. They call it partnering. And essentially, they're looking to partner or work with investigators and biotech companies on specific areas of interest that they have of our strategic importance to them. And so there are two, it can go both ways. So it can be an investigator who wants to raise money for a specific research project that they want to advance. And so they're looking for a company who has similar interests, who also is curious about that particular therapeutic area or that, not to get too technical, but mechanism of action. And then the other side is a pharma company can also post a project if they're interested in some sort of research challenge or they have some sort of molecule or compound that they want people to experiment with and potentially turn into some other treatment that obviously they can bring to market. So those are the two ways it can work right now.
The one question I would have in this for those who do not know anything about this kind of stuff, yeah. Myself included.
Yeah, and I knew nothing either before, by the way.
Which is...
I haven't taken science since high school.
Honestly, and that's another example of like so many founders coming up with ideas that they solved that are not in their expertise or wheelhouse because yeah. They're like, people who are in that expertise are so in that they don't see
exactly.
Around them. And you're like, that's a stupid thing.
Exactly.
So like with regard to this, like how does it work otherwise? Like what are the... you've mentioned obviously yeah. The partner pages, but like...
Yeah.
How does it work? Or I guess in this case, how does it not work?
Yeah,
and you guys
yeah.
Are fixing it.
Great question. So back in the 90s, when people tried to get jobs, they go to career fairs. That's how it works. So there's literally conferences that all of these deals and partnerships happen.
I forget that people still go to conferences.
No, that's like, that literally is by
medical fields love that shit,
yes.
Though. That's like where they go.
There's obviously a place for that, but that's 100%. There's talks, you meet people. Also, there's like referrals. A lot of it has to do with geography. If you happen to be in Boston or San Francisco, or if you're anywhere outside of a major city, it's really hard to have these partnerships. But it's literally happens offline. There's no centralized platform like HALO where these people can connect and make these connections and find these partners. And so there's a lot of, and the end result is there's a lot of promising research and a lot of talented investigators that never find that other side who would love to discover what they're working on and advance it.
Full disclosure, I just, this is going to come as a surprise to people listening because I, you know, run a company that does events and things. I cannot stand doing like the conference stuff. Like I can't go to them. I don't know what to
don't
do.
Don't tell Seth. Did you say that in your interview?
Well, he didn't hire me. Yeah. That's not how, yeah. We had a very different organization.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I didn't. Yes. No, I did not. I did not tell him that. In fact, I told him I can't wait to do this. No, it's true.
Yeah.
I've like, this is an old Seinfeld quote, Jerry Seinfeld quote that I have used my entire, well, since I heard it, not my entire years. I am so good at talking to you,
yep.
But I cannot talk with you.
Yep.
I'm great at standing on a stage and talking to I could talk to 10,000 people. I could walk on a stage like
yeah.
That. But if three of them come up to me and talk, yeah. I'm screwed.
Oh, and by the way, if you are a scientist who just loves researching and studying things that nobody can see in a lab,
oh, I'm
you're
sure
probably not the greatest yeah. Business development person.
Probably
in the world
not. And but like that's the thing. So I always look at this stuff. Like I think conferences like. This is way off the reservation. Conferences remind me of retail. The disruption is like if you're Toys R Us and you just stay the way you are, which is a big empty box and people put up their little pamphlets and shit. I think you're going to have a hard time long term. But I look at the conferences as creating an experience where I can demo and sort of showcase what we're working on and showcase the future or what it could look like and create an experience for you to engage with said, mm-hmm. you know, research team or whatever. Like, this is what the future could look like mm-hmm. with your support.
Yep.
I think that it could be interesting. I personally would be the wrong person to go to it.
Yep.
But in general, I think it's a huge, I think it's a huge opportunity because I don't know how else people, we didn't even get into this, but like people our age and younger
yep.
don't like to talk to each other in person.
Right, exactly.
So like where is this going?
I can't stand talking to people. Yeah.
Me neither. I literally went the other day. I was walking the...
Can we do this by text next time? This is
we
like,
should.
This is a lot
of talking. I took my beautiful Bazenji dog out for a walk the other day with my mom and we were just turning the corner. I was like, nope, we're going to go down in the next street and come back up because I saw one of our neighbors by my parents coming out and I have an injury to my hand and I didn't want to talk to them. So I just completely... I hate talking to humans.
Yeah. Well,
except for you.
And
I like you.
And to relate it back to a scientist, like they're not great at business development. They also don't have time for that, right? They can't go to every single like biotech and pharma company website and be like, oh, this guy's interested in diabetes
or
this target.
I can almost imagine what a biotech researcher's business pickup line sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. It's not
like that sounds like a drinking game. Like we should have a drinking game created talking just about pickup lines for business pickup lines, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Business pickup lines.
Yeah.
For researchers. This is it. So I see the value. Okay. So like my final kind of dive into this with you is I want to know what you think the impact can be long term with something like whether it's Halo or just in general changing of the guard, the changing of the way that these people are connecting. What do you see as the big impact? Is it more people that are going to be able to be helped? Is it a faster path to production? Like where do you see the impact be measured?
I think it's all of the above. I think just the more research that advances, the more therapies that will come to market. Because the difference with biotech and traditional tech is that a lot of what gets discovered is based on serendipity. So there's a number of cases throughout history from penicillin to Viagra where they were not trying to develop what they actually ended up developing. Yeah. So the more research we can support and fund and the better we can connect academics who aren't trained in this translational research with the industry partners who do know how to do that, the better chances we'll have of these therapies coming to market.
Just for the record, what was Viagra supposed to be?
I think it was a heart medication.
It's definitely not that.
No, it's totally
different. Your heart rate
and
going.
And it made some people a lot of money, too. So, I mean...
just a few.
That's
yeah.
the other thing, is this is a huge market that, that ironically, they're very separated, right? You've got these scientists who are struggling to fund their research, and on the other side, it's a huge industry. So, I do want to mention one thing, though, is about how difficult it is as we talked about, to connect with industry and advance their research. And that's why we're doing the Halo Awards on Thursday. The Halo Awards are going to be the Grammys for scientists. And we're recognizing three scientists from Northwestern, University of Chicago, and the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab who have gone above and beyond to actually turn their research into real patient treatment. So that's something I'm really excited about as well.
And I have to ask, who's making the trophies? Who's making the awards? Because there's a Chicago-based Christex
so
International.
So I have a good story
for
that, too. So my mom, that was her job. So she got a glass blower in Smyrna, Georgia, to create these awesome glass sculptures that are the awards. But they mailed them here, and whoever mailed them didn't package them well,
oh,
and they
no.
broke. So we had to mail them back. They're being fixed. And my mom, I shouldn't talk
to this. Is this scalable?
My mom is literally taking them on the plane with her. So they were fixed, and they will be at the awards.
You made your mom make your award. Although it's interesting.
It's a scrappy startup, right? I got to get all the free support I can get.
As the mother of an entrepreneur, her job is to just like breathe.
Yeah,
my mom's job is to pray for
operating officer.
My mom, my wife is my COO. She is the chief operating officer.
Exactly.
She wouldn't let me name anybody else because she's like, I have to listen to this shit all day. So that's the deal. My mom goes to church 6 days a week and prays, among other things, prays for me because she thinks that what I do is insane.
Wow, there's another doppelganger there. I'm pretty sure my mom doesn't do it at church. She just does it constantly in her mind, I think. So.
Well, yeah, I that's not even,
we
that doesn't, even, that doesn't count the rosary
Maybe,
time.
Hey, it all comes
there's
full
something
we have
here.
The same
we
mom.
Have, there's some sort of, you talk about serendipity. There's something weird going on here with you and I because it's nuts. Anyway. Let's make sure you plug. Where do people go to learn about the Halo Awards and go to the...
Yes. So the URL is not amazing, but it's events.halocures.com. matter.com/Halo Awards. It will be at Matter, which is next 1871, yep. Thursday from 5 to 6. It will be a cocktail reception, complimentary medicinal-themed cocktails and food from Fuda, and live performances from Northwestern Acapella and drug ensembles, and we have a harpist. So all that and more at the Halo Awards.
Awesome. Well, we're big Fuda fans. We've got our event on Friday, and Fuda is there as well. So,
okay, sweet.
I love the, again, Sarah.
Another light bank company.
Another light bank company, absolutely. That's a great story, by the way. Those guys all came out of Echo Logistics, and then...
Orazio and Viv.
Yep,
and yep,
Shane,
I remember
the rest
when they
of
were
them.
Like, do you like the name Fuda? I was like... No,
you know what?
But
no,
let's
but,
go with it.
But I kind of dig it now.
I like
so
it,
anyway,
exactly.
Shout out
like
to Fuda.
Now.
So check it out. And then to give the, you don't have a bunch of F's in your domain, so it's not terrible.
No.
What
I mean,
is the domain
site
to
is
learn
HaloCures.com, and we're relaunching the platform like at the Halo Awards, so everyone can learn about that as well.
Very cool. Well, you'll learn more on this podcast. I'm sure we'll have you come back in again. Kevin,
awesome.
Thanks so much for everything you've done for Technori and for Chicago, and obviously best of luck with Halo.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Of course, you can listen to this episode and more at Technori.com or on Spotify or wherever the hell you ingest all of your podcasts. And naturally, you can follow us on social media at anything at Technori. And if you want to file complaints, you can give it to me at Katoon on Twitter and on, I don't know, Facebook and Instagram. And pretty much everywhere. It's the same deal. Everything's at Technori, at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.